Good afternoon and welcome to For the Cause of Christ, the radio ministry of the North Coast Baptist Church of Lakewood. The church is under the direction of its pastor, John Lutz. Stay tuned for a message straight and direct from the Word of God. Here now with this week's message is Pastor John Lutz.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to our broadcast today. We are so thankful that you are with us. We have got a special broadcast for you today and a special guest in studio here. We'll introduce to you in just a few moments. But I am so thankful that you are with us on this beautiful Friday afternoon. And I hope that you're going to be able to get out and enjoy some of this good weather out there that the Lord has provided for us today. And then when Sunday comes around, I want you to come on over to the church house and meet with us. We meet together at 11 o'clock and 6 o'clock Sunday nights as well. And we would love for you to come on out and join us as we hear some preaching, sing some good old congregational songs, and just praise the Lord together. And we meet together also on Wednesdays at 7, which you're welcome to come as well. We do the same thing. And we just, truth be known, we probably ought to meet a whole lot more. It's just a wonderful time and to do that. But come on out. All the let me give you the address. It's 2051 Quail Street. It's in the southeast corner of Lakewood, about a quarter mile west of 117th and Madison, if you're familiar with the area. We're one block south, right off Madison, 2051 Quail Street. And again, in Lakewood, and our phone number is 216-521-3800, 216-521-3800. Of course, you can always check us out on our website at northcoastbaptist.org, northcoastbaptist.org. There's a contact link. If you want to get a hold of us that way, you are more than welcome to do that. And by the way, if you're interested about our preaching and teaching and our services, you can always go to our YouTube page at North Coast Baptist Church and check out all of our services. And we're thankful for that avenue. We never really did that until COVID came. It was born out of necessity, I guess. But I'm thankful for it. It continues to get the message out there. So anyway, let's get into our broadcast today. I wasn't 100% sure if I was going to make it today. I had a funeral I had to do this morning, and it's always a privilege to be able to go preach the gospel with that, but it was kind of a last-minute thing. And so I invited my dear, dear friend, Pastor Al Davis, to be on call and here just in case. I wasn't able to make it, but I told him I wanted him to be a part of the broadcast today. Anyway, you know him as the host of Live with Pastor Al right here on 1220 AM, The Word, on Friday afternoons at 1:30, and also Late Night Live with Pastor Al on Sunday nights from 10 till midnight. And so, Pastor Al, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Pastor Lutz. I'm glad that you allowed me in here. When you're saying dear, dear friend, I was looking around thinking, who do you let in here?
He's coming later, so you had to
rival.
No, I really appreciate you. appreciate your friendship and your love for the Lord. Yeah. And, you know, it's been neat to get to know you over the years and really get to spend time with you. I really appreciate you.
Well, and I want to let people know you're going to be sitting in for me later on this month, on the last Friday of the month.
Yeah.
I just was thinking about that.
The
28th, yeah, I believe, yeah. And because I'm going to be out at the Summit County Fair. Our church, Richfield Bible Baptist Church, has a booth there every year. And for the last, I don't know how many years we've done this, you've been in here in the studio during our program at 1:30, and I've called in from the fair, and so far we've been able to do it without too much problems with the wind and the announcements and things going on at the fair. And then we just talk about some different things there as well. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be wonderful. Well, I brought you in today because I wanted to talk, I don't do this often, but talk about some things going on politically and in our state. Well, obviously, we've got some big things that are coming up, two really monumental elections this year. So let's deal with the first one, which is coming up just a few weeks, issue number one. And I have to tell you, I know the media is good at what they do, propaganda and those type of things, but I'm concerned of some faction that continues to exist with Republicans. I was doing a little research on I don't remember where I wrote it, but there was a list of people, even, you know, when they voted on this issue in the State House, mm-hmm. you know, there were still five Republicans that voted against it, moving it forward. Now, all the I understand all the Senate Senator Republicans, they all voted for it. They were in favor.
Right.
But there were still five that, and I don't know what's going on with Patton. I tell you, he is just taking a turn. I know some of his family members, but, you know, he represents Strongsville. I hope that doesn't represent Strongsville with that. But, you know, what are you seeing? You're a little closer to the fire than I am. You know, is it something we should be concerned about that, are we going to be able to get this thing over the hump?
Yeah, and I was going to point out one of the things with Patton is that in order to be a Republican in Cuyahoga County, essentially a Democrat stronghold, yeah. Generally speaking, to get elected as a Republican in a Democrat stronghold, you're probably going to be leaning more to the Democrat side on a lot of issues.
Yeah, that's a good
point. And I can see where him and also Senator Dolan's the same way.
Yeah.
You know, you hear his ads come up, and he's the most conservative guy out there until you watch how he votes. And acts when they get down to Columbus.
He did vote for this one.
Yeah, he actually did in the Senate because all the senators did.
Yeah.
But there was two issues. Actually, they were joint resolutions. One was Senate Joint Resolution 2, which is the one that actually got passed.
Yeah.
The other was House Joint Resolution 1. They were both essentially identical. And that was a lot of controversy over that. The time that we have, we don't need to rehash all of the things that were going on, the coup, and Derek Mearns should have been speaker, and then Jason Stevens became speaker because all of the Democrats in lockstep voted for him.
Yeah.
And the general belief is that they voted for him partly because he agreed that he would keep this issue from becoming reality.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be voted on in January, so that would have been on in the May primaries, and of course he killed it. And it was languishing in the committees until the very last minute. I was actually down in the State House the day that it passed out of the committee, and so then it was a matter of would he bring it to a floor vote. There was only a certain length of time in order to get it voted on, approved in the House. Then it had to go to the Senate for, you know, approval of, you know, a little tweaking that they do. And because it was a joint resolution, did not have to go to the governor, you know, for his signature, although he had indicated he was in support of it. And of course, it had to be done by a certain time, and all the way up until practically the day of, at least the day before, Speaker Stevens was indicating that he was going to try and prevent it from being a reality. He made vague promises about, oh, we could vote on it in November, we could vote on it next year during the primaries, but in reality, the left has a whole laundry list of things that they want to accomplish. Abortion on demand is just one of them. If you're a Second Amendment rights person, gun control, various things dealing with gun control, red flag laws, magazine size, and all they want to put into the Constitution of Ohio. And all of this, because right now, in order to change the Ohio Constitution, we can do a citizen-led initiative, and you have to get signatures from 44 counties out of Ohio's 88 counties. You only need half the counties, and you have to get a certain number of signatures, and it's all tied in with the last governor's race, you know, the number of people who voted, and in that, a certain percentage of that. And you get these signatures, and then you turn them in, and then they get reviewed for accuracy because there's always some that are wrong. And right now, I don't know what it is. I think it's a 10-day window or something. They have a chance. They can go out and if the signature has been thrown out, get a few more, or correct them or something like that.
I think it is 10 days.
Right.
Sure.
And but now issue one, amongst other things, will remove that. It'll be, you know, you have your tie, your window to get the signatures, and once you turn it in, it is what it is. And then also and this is something that a lot of people don't realize, and I'm very strongly in favor of this, it'll change the requirement from signatures in 44 counties to all 88 counties, which I think is a tremendous thing. It'll give voice to rural Ohio that does not currently have a voice when it comes to citizen-led petitions.
Well, let me stop you there for a moment, because one of the arguments is that it's taking away the voice of the people.
Right.
So I mean, what you just stated right there is a complete contrary truth to what they're espousing.
Absolutely, because if you have a limited time and a limited budget to get a petition through, you go basically to where the population centers are.
Right.
And when we're talking about this, it usually isn't just like a citizens group. It's usually an out-of-state organization, a lot of these things. That's how we got gambling, I believe, and some other things, and the abortion amendment that's planned for this November. A lot of these are out-of-state groups, out-of-state money. They hire people. In fact, I was just talking to somebody who was interacted with one of these people gathering signatures, and the guy said, "Oh yeah, I'm from Michigan. I was hired to come down here and get these signatures."
Yeah,
you know, so it's out of state money, out of state interests, and they start with this citizen petition, and they go to the more populated areas, partly because, especially in regards to left leaning groups, the more populated areas tend to be more left leaning. So that's where you go, and it's for this reason that the Ohio Farm Bureau, for instance, and the Ohio Pork Council, you say, why are they supporting issue one?
Yeah, right.
It's because there's attempts, PETA and some of these other far left animal rights groups and vegan groups have tried to put things in the Ohio Constitution in the past that would basically essentially make pig farming, chicken farming, you know, things like that, and beef cattle and things much more difficult, if not impossible, in the state of Ohio. Well, they don't go to Washington County where the farmers are. They go to Cuyahoga County and they tell people, isn't it terrible that this poor cute little piggy is in this, you know, whatever the size space that it's in. Look at this poor little piggy. They don't go to Noble County and talk to the farmers and about to the chicken and egg production, all that. They just go to, you know, Franklin County and say, look at this poor little chickie.
Yeah.
And they play on all of that. And the people in those rural areas have no voice because nobody comes to them to sign a petition, either for or against. And then you say, well, they have a voice when the election comes. Well, their numbers are well outweighed by the numbers in the urban areas of the state. So they have no voice on a citizen-led petition. It's just that nobody cares, in a sense. This issue one gives rural Ohio a voice. Some people say, well, it takes them the requirement of 50% of the vote plus one. That's plus one vote. Sounds confusing. Yeah. We worked it out one time. I forget what the number was, 8-point-some million voters in last election or whatever. And when you figure it out, it came out to 50.00001% was all it takes to change the Constitution of the state of Ohio. And it's going to raise that to 60%, which is more of a supermajority, but it's also, I call it a consensus majority, because it gets the general consensus, not just half the states for it and half the states against it, but it gets a broad consensus before we do something as important as changing the foundational document that governs our state.
Yeah. Let me again, play kind of devil's advocate here, just for the sake of, sometimes I think it's good to look at the arguments and then let's deal with them. So, you know, one of their arguments is, you know, it's going to take away the voice of majority, right? Because it's supposed to be majority rules.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is it supposed to be majority rules?
Well, only if you want a mobocracy, which is really what a democracy is, and that leads to misconception. The United States and the various states are not democracies. We're guaranteed in the Constitution of the United States. First off, the United States is a constitutional republic. It has a constitution. It's a fundamental guiding document laying out the responsibilities and functions of government, and then a code of laws that gets changed, you know, frequently, yeah. And how to carry out those foundational documents. And so each state was to be guaranteed a Republican form of government. Now, we're not talking about the Democrat Party, right, Republican yeah. Party. We're talking about a Republican form of government, meaning each state was to be a republic like the United States is. In other words, we're to be a constitutional republic. And so we, as a state, have a constitution. In fact, if you want a good trivial question, what's the most recent state to be added to the Union? Most people say, well, it's either Hawaii or Alaska. It's actually Ohio, because when they were doing the Constitution review for Alaska and Hawaii, they found out that they never reviewed Ohio's Constitution and approved it. Really? And so Ohio technically was not a state. We put all these people in the White House as president. We put all these people on a Supreme Court. We had all these senators and representatives. And they said, we can't undo all of that. We'll backdate the ratification of Ohio's Constitution back to the 1800s and call it a day. So that's what
they
did.
I didn't know that.
But we have a constitution in the state of Ohio. Now, the United States Constitution is somewhere in the order of 7,000 words. I can stick it in my shirt pocket.
Right, yeah.
The Ohio Constitution is about 10 times that. It's 70-some thousand words at least, and it's like a small book. Mm-hmm. And I had a thing that said that the U.S. Constitution has been amended 27 times since it's been there. Yeah. Ohio's been amended 172 times, because Ohio's one of the easiest states right now currently to amend the state constitution. We, along with about eight states, I think, in addition to us, have this simple majority. Now, it wasn't always that way. The progressives, read the leftists and communists, back in the early 1900s, pushed through this maneuver of getting states to change. Now, they got 20-some states, I think it was like 26 states or something, to change the process of amending their state constitution. Because, see, they realized it takes two-thirds of the Senate and two-thirds of the House and three-quarters of the state government, state legislatures, to change the U.S. Constitution. Right. Supermajority. And they realize that because the Constitution is a fundamental document. It should be treated with a great deal of concern and care. And we should make sure that when it's altered, we have a broad consensus of the people rather than just a bare majority. The founding fathers abhorred the idea of a bare majority for these types of important things. I know we use a majority in terms of electing, you know, officers and, you know, representatives and things like that. But the progressives in the early 1900s realized they couldn't change the U.S. Constitution too easily. So they started working on states.
Yeah.
And the idea that eventually they got enough states, they could change the direction of the United States, because after all, we are a collection of states, a federal collection. Most of those states realized, you know, soon enough the folly of doing that and making their constitutions a little unwieldy and clunky. So they rectified that. Ohio and eight other states still have not. Yeah, so we're behind the times on this.
I think some people I've talked to, it's, you know, they're looking at it from where it's at now.
Right.
They've forgotten that this is not how it's always been.
Correct.
And we're just trying to get back to where it should be, which, you know, I've said for years, the Constitution ought to be the hardest thing for us to change, because it's that fundamental thing. You want to change your bylaws, you want to change how it functions in the legislative, that's fine. That you can do that. But the Constitution, you know, I heard Brian Stewart speak a few weeks ago, and he was talking about, you know, literally casinos. They had a situation where the name or the address or one of the things had to be changed, because it's literally written in the Constitution that for those specific people are the only ones that can own casinos.
And those specific addresses.
Because the special interests came in and were able to get that pushed. And, you know, if this fails, I think it's just going to be really, it's going to be ugly from this point on. But you know, there's hope. And, you know, Jason Stephen, let's go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was that way, but what happened on the day that it got brought to the floor?
Well, you know, I still suspect, you know, the Bible says it got the king's heart's in the Lord's hands.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened. I think God changed his direction, because going up to it, myself and some others were thinking, well, this is it. It's over. It's not going to happen. He's going to run the clock out, and we won't get this through.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, he did. And Representative Russo, who is the Senate, or I'm sorry, the House Minority Leader,
yeah,
she was absolutely livid. I watched it live on feed. And you could see her knuckles just white, where she was clutching onto the microphone and short, choppy sentences that she was using, and stabbing her finger as she's pointing accusations at the speaker and the Republicans, and flipping her hair back. And she just was absolutely livid that this actually, because all of the Democrats apparently lined up with her blessing to vote for Stevens with the promise that this wouldn't see the light of day.
Yeah.
And now here it is. I think God did it.
Amen.
And so I think God's people ought to thank God for that and get out and vote yes on issue one on August 8th.
And that's what gives me hope, because as we were talking before, you know, you see all these, and I know you've got your list of, you know, a lot of different groups of who's supporting and who's not. And it's your pretty typical lists of there, But knowing there's been some faction and some breaking away, I mean, not that they're of any significant value, but some of the former politicians and those running for office recently, you know, mm-hmm. coming out against it, and Republicans. But I always go back to you mentioning that, because if God did do that, if God moved that to bring that, then God's not done yet. He's got mm-hmm. He's not done working this out. And that's, you know, with the Lord, you can always find hope and I find hope, you know, with that. So I think it's a good thing. We're not really going to have time to dive into it, but one of the things, you know, if you look at the proposed constitutional amendment sheets from the Secretary of State's office,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're even spinning it, and we talked about this before, but they're talking about 40% of the voters can block any issue, and which one isn't right. We've already established that.
Yeah.
But two, it's kind of just a play on words is all it is.
Oh, absolutely, because if issue one passes, it'll require 60%, which means 40% would lose.
Yeah.
They wouldn't block it. It would be 41% or I guess 40% plus one.
Yeah,
maybe 40.00001%. But what they're trying to do is turn it on its ear. Yeah. They're trying to imply that the minority can hold the majority hostage over some of these issues. And, you know, again, this gets back to the fact that we're a constitutional republic, not a democracy.
That's right. Yeah.
A constitutional republic does protect the rights of the minority. I mean, if I could get enough other pastors that we would vote that, your Ferrari should be mine. You know, how could you refuse that in a pure democracy?
Yeah.
But you have rights, and even though you and me in the minority, you have a voice that needs to be heard. And so the minority rights are, and that's where we get a consensus to where we get a supermajority of people who are in favor of a fundamental change, a fundamental altering of our state's most fundamental document, the Constitution of the state of Ohio. You know, a lot of people are saying, too, well, why now? Why not? Where did this come from? There's been a movement and a desire, but nothing has really grabbed a hold of people's attention until the left, after the fall, you know, Roe v. Wade, announced that they were going to amend the Ohio Constitution to put abortion on demand in the state constitution, and making Ohio go from pro-life to one of the most radical pro-death states in the nation.
That's right.
That galvanized Christian groups, pro-life groups, conservatives, and if that's the only reason to vote for it, that's a great reason.
That's a great reason.
But there's a lot of other really good reasons that we've been talking about here today.
Yeah.
And Now I was going to point out that Mike Gonadakis of Higher Right to Life will be on with me in the next half hour.
I was going
to
ask you what you're doing. Yeah, so you'll be able to go on talking about this. So it's a very important issue. I mean, we got to get out there. We got to vote and get out there and do it. So stay tuned. Thanks for being with me, Pastor Al, and I hope to stay tuned and listen to his broadcast here coming up here in just a little bit.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
You have been listening to For the Cause of Christ with Pastor John Lutz from the North Coast Baptist Church in Lakewood. Pastor Lutz and the congregation would like to extend a cordial invitation for you to join them at any of their services. Sunday morning worship is at 11, the Sunday evening service is at 6, and the Wednesday Bible study is at 7 p.m. North Coast Baptist Church is located at 2051 Quail Street in Lakewood. For directions or more information, please call 216-521-3800. That's 216-521-3800. Or send an email to northcoastbaptist@sbcglobal.net. That's northcoastbaptist@sbcglobal.net. Thank you for listening. This program has been sponsored by the North Coast Baptist Church of Lakewood, Ohio.